So, Erwith, Earl Honey, and your machina, when the phone rings, ooh, answer it, and the voice is...
What are you doing with my daughter?
Ooh, tell your girl, and she say...
My daughter's dead.
Then who
was phone? See, in that read, they're both dead. Both the dad and the daughter.
Well, thank you for tuning in today, and a happy Thanksgiving to you. This is Thanksgiving episode that we're doing here. You know,
gobble, gobble, turkey lovers.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of sad. We ran into some issues. You know, spooky month was last month, and we only recorded one episode all spooky month. Yes. That was all we were able to do, because the true spooky thing is the Rona.
And our work schedules.
And our work schedules. Yes. But no, so thank you very much for tuning in. We are so glad that you're here. This is episode number 12, and I think we've been trying to record this for about a month. So yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for tuning in.
It was prophesized, and here at last is the culmination.
Indeed. So like always, we have a couple things to mention, but I think Steven really has the delivery down. Let's go to him.
Hi. Thanks for watching the Spook Pod. If you want, you could get four of your friends together for a viewing party. We'll record you a custom introduction to the next episode of the podcast. They also might feed me if you do that. Fingers crossed. Be sure to like, comment, share, subscribe, etc. at your earliest convenience for the sake of my well-being. We've also got some viewer goals just around the corner. At 100, we're going to do a dramatic reading of one of our previous story reads, like from a script. And at 500, not only will we be going to hunt the Waterford sheep squash, but I might see the sun. Okay, we should probably stop now, because they're gonna be back in a minute, and if I behave well and don't speak, Bradley and Josh might give me a blanket. See you next time.
So I put my pants on backwards.
You don't say. Anyways, just as a public service announcement,
Josh put his pants on backwards.
And Steven was not harmed. Now, Josh, conspiracy theory, where are we getting that from today? Because we have to cite our sources.
Oh, my gosh. I'm pulling it from so many places, okay? At first, I'm pulling it from gottheology.com. I'm pulling it from an Alabama's pastor's sermon. And I'm also pulling it from worldbuilding.org.
Oh, this is going to be good.
I can't wait to hear it. So like I said, this is episode 12, and you know, it was actually
my... Oh, also, I'm pulling it from Karl Marx.
Oh. Alabama pastor and Karl Marx in the same work cited page.
I'm pulling it from his Communist Manifesto. You will see.
I can't wait. So I was the one in charge of sourcing the stories, and I went to that new blog space that you had kind of directed us to.
Uh-huh.
And we landed on I found this very interesting story first off. It looked like something that got pulled from like a local neighborhood watch kind of thing, like somebody, like the whole see something, say something. It looks like that's where it was originally posted. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say this is because the post started with, "This story was found on a blog for a local neighborhood watch. The contents may be deeply disturbing to some readers." Because, you know, got to have those disclaimers there. So, yeah, this was just, you know, posted on some neighborhood watch forum and then got dragged here. So, believe that the person that posted this goes by Greg. Yeah. Hey, so I don't know if this is the proper forum, but I have a story that I feel I need to share. I just moved into this neighborhood not too long ago. It was a nice little cul-de-sac with older folks. After the incident, it just seemed like the safer option. I used to love living in the country, but the forests have just become too unsafe. Now I'm stuck here in this retirement village. Don't get me wrong, though. The suburbs ain't bad, but they ain't home. Here is my story. The other day, I was at home, waiting for the news report to finish before I slumped off to bed. There seemed to be no major happenings, which was good, just your typical warnings. Life sure had been interesting these last few months, but humans were good at adapting. Maybe too good. Anyway, after the news finished, I grabbed my phone and stood to get off the couch, causing a pain in my lower back to amplify. As I winced in the pain, I heard the sound of shuffling feet right outside. I looked out my large bay window and saw what I thought to be a figure running down the road. They were tall, too tall, and lanky. The gait was irregular in how they ran, and the attire, what a strange attire. It was similar to a onesie children wear, which have the feet baked into the fabric. Well, it wasn't the weirdest thing I had experienced in this month alone, so I shrugged it off and went to bed. Yesterday morning, I went to the local coffee shop, where the local lads all hung about. They had welcomed me into their group since moving here, and I was oh so thrilled. I ordered my coffee at the counter and joined my compatriots there.
"Morning, Greg,"
called Cecil, the oldest gentleman of the bunch. His calm demeanor and killer stash gave off an air of comfort around him. "Morning, Cecil," I responded. We quickly began chatting. Cecil took the opportunity to show off his new pet cam that was focused on a pile of floof he called a cat. Our last friend Pete had yet to arrive. He was normally a little late, so I shrugged it off and continued to talk with Cecil. The minutes started to become more and more numerous, and I was truly beginning to question where our friend was. Our food came and went, and I was on about 3 cups of coffee too many. Cecil saw the concern on my face and offered we go to check on Pete, just to make sure he didn't get distracted by one of his projects. We hopped into Cecil's golf cart that he used to get around the suburban town and puttered down the road towards Pete's house. Two of us sat side by side as we passed my home, then his home, sitting in silence. The sound of the neighborhood was off, almost like it was holding its breath. We soon rounded the corner down Pete's road, and my heart went into my throat. Officer Malloy's squad car was pulled into the driveway, and an ambulance was pulling out, with no lights on.
"That could be a good thing,"
Cecil mustered as we steeled ourselves for the worst. We pulled into Pete's driveway, and that is where we saw it. Pete. Dead. He was lying on his lawn with a cardboard contraption beside him. As he lay there, I could almost swear he was grinning.
"Best we can figure. He was trying to build a flying machine of sorts,"
grumbled Malloy.
"He ever mention anything about flying to you folks?"
"No, officer."
Cecil's voice sounded distant and sad.
"Never to us, anyway."
"Well, he died with his boots on, at least. And hey, it's better to go this way. Have you seen the news lately? Well, gentlemen, I best be off. We tried to contact the family, but we couldn't get a hold of him."
His wife went away on a spa cruise. Poor Patty, she would be devastated. She was due back from her trip any day. What a thing to come home to. As Officer Malloy drove off, the coroner came and went. Cecil and I went to check out Pete's house. The whole thing just seemed odd. Riding a cardboard machine off your roof trying to fly? Pete was in his 50s. He was a retired factory worker. He was kind, but far from the smartest man in the room. How could he think up this idea, much less build a flying machine from cardboard? What was he thinking?
"Hey, Greg, take a look at this."
Cecil's voice pulled me from my thoughts as I followed into the kitchen. There sat a box of donuts, open on the counter. Something was off, though. 2 donuts were missing, and 1 plate with a half-eaten donut. Pete was a man of moderation, one who never indulged. He would not eat more than 1 donut, ever. Who could have eaten the other one? The figure from the night before running down the road danced across my vision. He'd come running from Peach Street, right? I couldn't remember.
Greg, you should grab a donut. They are might fine.
I just stared blankly at Cecil, already shoving a second donut down his throat. He was the worst when it came to sweets. No! I admonished him, and you should show some respect and not feast upon a dead man's last meal. Cecil groaned as I closed the box, folded it up, and threw it out. We both locked up Pete's, Patty's house and loaded into the golf cart. Cecil dropped me back off at home, and as I walked to my front door, I noticed that the garden in my front window needed some watering. I lumbered and grabbed the hose, and as I watered the plants, I noticed that some of the glaze had gotten on my hands as I folded the box. I quickly used that hose to wash the glaze off my hands, not paying much attention to the water as it splashed upon the garden. The rest of the day flew by as I sat down once again to watch the nightly news. There's no mention of Pete. How could there be with all the other craziness going around? It was enough to give anyone nightmares. The news program came to a close, and I switched off my TV. As soon as I did, my heart quickened. I saw in the reflection two faces, one that I possessed and the other of a man in my window. I sprang up from my couch and whirled around, shocked to see nothing but the back of a figure running down my road. It was the same thing as the night before, slendered and onesied, running down the road. As I watched him run, my heart rate slowed. What a weird creature, I thought to myself. Simply laughed and went off to bed. I awoke early today by the sound of a phone call. It was from Cecil. I quickly answered my phone to be greeted with the strange sound of Cecil's cackle.
Greg, I figured it out. I know what happened to Pete. It was the donuts. I can't explain it. Ever since eating one, I've felt like I've been mocked. Mocked by some unseen force. Then, I mean, you wouldn't believe it unless you saw it. There was a thing.
A thing?
Yes, Greg, a thing. I heard a knock on my door, and when I opened it, there was a thing and a figure. It was T-posing in my driveway, and I was just kind of scared, you know? But when I looked down, and guess what? Donuts. A whole dozen. So I nodded at the T-poser, and I ran, and he ran off laughing. I brought the donuts in and opened them. One was missing. It was the same thing that happened with Pete. I thought, well, Donna, if stale donuts are as good as these should be great. And I gobbled a couple down, and then it all came together. I started to feel giddy, like I could do anything. And then I started laughing, and I've been laughing all night. I can barely see anymore. But I'm not scared. It's just too funny. Just too much in a good mood.
I heard the sound of cackling and coughing, then the sound of choking, then silence. Too silent. I grabbed my landline and dialed 911. They said they would send someone over. I felt sick. I could barely think. I just sat there, staring, listening to the seconds tick by. About a half an hour later, I heard a knock at my door. It pulled me from my trance.
Officer Malloy, open up, please. We have some sad news regarding your friend Cecil.
I quickly shuffled toward my front door and hastily opened it. There I saw a ragged Malloy. He smiled weakly at me.
I'm so sorry, but he's gone. According to his pet cam and your reports, he laughed himself to death.
I stood there, shocked. Cecil was gone? I couldn't believe it.
He left this letter for you.
I thanked the officer and closed the doors. I took a ragged breath and opened up the letter. Inside were the scrawlings of a madman. Nothing made sense. All I could make out were two words. Donut Man. That brings us to tonight. I'm posting this so that people can keep an eye out for this figure. I don't know if it is a prankster or a murderer. I don't even know if the donuts have anything to do with it. I just want this town to know that they are moving in. And when they do, no one is safe. Anyways, gotta go. Just heard a knock at my front door. Maybe it's the cops with some more news.
Lots to unpack here.
Steven, I grant that usually your reads are so good, but your read for the cop was the funniest thing I think I've ever heard. Open up! This is the police! I got some news about your friend! Open the frick up!
He's dead!
Your friend's dead! Open the door!
Laughed himself right to death. Oh.
I think they use the same voice that they do for a SWAT that they do for bereavement calls. Oh. You know, it's just a fundamental misunderstanding of
the way Mrs. Malroy, your son's dead. Got hit in the back by a golf cart.
It was my golf cart.
My golf cart, I did it.
You'll be next.
He was resisting arrest.
My body cam is off.
Body cam fell off, though. You can't see it. I mean, you might hear something that sounds like the backing up noise, but that was just me making sure that he wasn't beep, suffering none.
Beep, beep. Crunch.
Okay, hi, everyone. Man, we are bad today.
We're not in a good flow.
Steven, you need to cut that. When the police are at my door, I don't want them quoting this one back to me.
So, yeah, we had a mysterious onesied man running around. We had donuts.
We had donuts. Donuts that caused manic, just mania.
Apparently.
That was a great twist. Love that twist inside of there. That was good. The second that he flew a cardboard flying contraption off of his roof, I was like, that sounds like an old man on a sugar rush.
Sounds like that guy that strapped like 300 helium balloons to a lawn chair and became a pilot.
Sounds like he tried to make Up a reality.
Yes. Quite.
I'm just saying, like, I think it has a statistical probability of that happening to him. Just one of these days, we're going to read it in the newspaper. Because he's been so safe for all these years, but his background and everything.
Oh, man. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about our drink this week, because the observant viewer might have noticed that Bradley and I have been sipping it the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coffee, because boy howdy do we need it this morning.
Sips.
Also, side note, we are also drinking the coffee because the spookiest thing is three men sitting around drinking a natural diuretic for a long period.
And there's only two stalls.
Ba, ba, ba. With a diuretic, who says I need a stall?
We could pause right now, like a choose your own adventure game show. Will they? A, hold it and wait for someone to finish. B, side by side, the same toilet. C, pick a urinal.
D, use the sink.
Submit your answers now.
Dun, 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 dun. The real answer was E all along. Somebody just bears the indignity of going into the woman's bathroom.
Yeah.
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 Cleaner in there anyway.
So not true.
Oh man, really?
Okay, first off, I
most
just want to say
I've been the ladies' room is cleaner than the men's room.
Having worked as a cleaner for a multitude of churches,
yeah,
I can tell you with 100% certainty, the woman's bathroom is always worse than the men's.
Really?
Because the men's bathroom is more like a generalized dirtiness, like a kind of aerosoled filth. But
yeah.
The women's bathroom,
yeah, cakes everything
is
a little.
Like concentrated bits of horror.
It's like
yeah.
Clean, 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 clean,
and then
war
just
crime. Clean, clean,
yeah,
clean,
yeah,
clean,
yeah.
Clean. Redacted.
Except you put way too much clean in between the intervals of redacted, right? So it's
valid,
like
valid.
Redacted, and then like, okay, but the walls are okay this time.
Oh,
I'm just saying, there's a reason that there's a mini trash can in each stall. It's nasty.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Valid. Yeah, coffee.
Speaking of church, tell us more about this. Wait. We didn't even rate the story.
No, or
no,
predict what's
what
going to
happen
doing?
Next. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No, there's no what happens next. That's the end of the first story.
Oh, yeah. We're not doing two-parters.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
No.
Yeah,
yeah,
Bradley
found
didn't pick a Chungus story this week.
Yeah.
I'm the one who picked the Chungo.
Bong Chungo.
Yeah, no. Story Donut Man loved it. That was an act of beauty. Each word that was written there, layered one after another, was like the kind of kicking of icing on a fine, beautiful donut, on an artisanal
Indeed.
Donut.
Indeed.
I'm giving it a 2 out of. Actually, no, I'm going to go give it a 4 out of 5 for the spoop, for the spoopy index, and the reason is because I know I will die by laughing. That is just. It happens about once every 100 years to a person, and it's been about 100 years, and I choke way too much
You're about
laughing.
Due. Yeah,
yeah.
You're about to.
Yeah. So
you've been flirting with disaster for years.
Yeah. Oh. So that's just I know I'm gonna go out like Cecil.
Yeah.
But also, some of the beauties inside of there, I love the ominousness of the Donut Man. You never got a good side of him. You never explained his MO. He was just a thing that left donuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he know that the donuts were, you know, kill possible, you know?
Yeah. Was he just a delivery man?
Yeah.
Was he just a ding
a really
dong
bad do- door dasher?
Yeah, yeah, a ding-dong deliverer? Yeah.
He's just a pajama enthusiast.
Well, the way that the
author
described...
Is there a man under
descri-
the onesie at all?
The man who just... The way that the author described it was, like, slender and almost not human-like. So I'm finding it hard to, like, really picture it. What I have inside of my head is a vision of a person who's too tall for a set of pajamas, putting on pajamas, and it, like, stretching out in kind of, like, that weird way where it might be too wide for him, but it's, like... pulled up tight in all of the weird awkward spots.
Yeah.
So when he's like T-posing, it like makes little like kite wings on either side.
Yeah.
Red squirrel mode.
Yeah.
T for takeoff.
I'm picturing, I don't know why, but I'm picturing Tobey Maguire in a youth size 7.
Okay, yeah. Just... so yeah. Yeah, no. I liked it. 4 out of 5. Steven, what do you rate it?
I the thought of the envoy of death being this What a way to go.
What a way to go.
What a way to go. Like, if this happened to me, I can only picture the jokes my family would be making at my funeral, you know?
Also, can we just talk about Cecil and Greg ransacking Pete's house as soon as he dies?
Yeah.
Like, the coroner comes, takes him away, and they're like, let's go.
All right, it's public domain now. No one lives here.
I've heard he's got some rare loot.
Just Cecil standing in the kitchen scarfing down donuts.
It is such BBC mystery rules. It's such like, oh no, they took away the dead body. The police aren't interested in this place anymore. Let's go have a look around.
Contaminate all the evidence.
Oh my gosh, look, it's the Hardy Boys. Move out of the way. You just can't move because it's elbow deep and just teen investigators. Teen mystery solvers.
Well, these aren't teens. These are like boomer investigators.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm just imagining two old men trying to like worm their way around. Like, wow, would you look at that one?
I want
Hardy
now.
Brother One.
Says to Hardy Brother 2.
I don't know their names.
So he says to him.
Does anybody know the names?
All I can think of is Tom Hardy, but that's an actor.
They might not even be the last name Hardy, now I'm thinking about that. Don't Google it. Don't Google it. It's not worth it. Yes, it's an advert for a book series that's almost in public domain.
Joe and Frank.
Joe and Frank. I never read a book.
Who knew?
Ever. It's my problems with English on the podcast. No, I never read one of those. I never read a Hardy Brother book.
Hardly, brother.
Right next to the then who is phone crochet. I'm gonna get brass plaques engraved with it with my favorite quote for each of you. And yours is just gonna say, Josh, Spoop's co-host. I never read a book. Bradley, I'm waiting for the right one for you. Too much good. Too much good.
I was gonna say you'll be waiting a while. All right. Oh. So yeah, I'd probably say like a on a spookiness scale, probably like a 2 or 3, because like
I think 3 feels right.
Yeah, like we didn't see a monster. Well, I mean, I guess we kind of seen a monster, but we never seen like
any person older than a child who wears a onesie out in public is some form of menace.
I don't know. Like,
at best, you're on a list.
The monster doesn't seem to do the attacking. So it's like either poison. It's something. So there's a little
bit. It could just be the sugar.
Yeah. These old men just can't handle the sugar.
They're just saying, you can't come back from keto.
I was
going to
say,
this is.
I was going to say, you know, when he said he drank 3 cups of coffee too many, he'd only had 1. Yeah.
I'm zooming. Someone gave him something that wasn't decaf.
Hopping in a golf cart.
I think there's a sinister muffin man behind this. There's a baker out there that's doing this.
A the sinister man baker is, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Do you know the
muffin man?
Do you know the muffin man?
The muffin man.
The Muffin Man!
Cool!
Clipped immediately.
So, Josh, why don't you go ahead and tell us about this wonderful conspiracy theory? Because I am tantalized.
Scariest time of the year. Don't pay attention to the grammar I already established. I am barely literate.
Welcome to the Thanksgiving episode.
Look, folks, I need to pit you on edge so that you have your guards up inside of this catastrophic season that is up and coming. People were worried about Halloween being the oncoming of the dark forces here on Earth. Nobody has their eyes set up on the right threat.
The gentleman.
Santa Claus!
I was going to say the gentleman closing out the parade today.
Yes, absolutely. Freaking Santa freaking Claus. That's his legal name. They just admit some things. Yes. I've been looking for seasonal conspiracy theories because we're in a seasonal time of year. Do you know what you can't find seasonally?
Christmas stuff.
You cannot find conspiracy theories about Thanksgiving. The most that I could find about a Thanksgiving Day conspiracy theory was how to deal with your QAnon uncle, which I feel like, well, appropriate for the masses. It's not necessarily what we're looking for here.
Yeah, so. We are the QAnon uncles here.
I mean, if anybody's the QAnon uncle in this podcast, it's obviously me because I believe most of these. I really do think if you dig deep enough, you will go to a hollow earth. And it is my ambition to go down there and punch Hitler in the face.
I'm excited for Thursday when you lean across the table to our family and you go, I gotta tell you about the Kentucky guides. You need to start burying dry food.
No, it's not a threat anymore because a dad squad took out another dad squad. All right.
And so, Josh is just sad that he wasn't part of either.
From the rubble, they will rise.
Yes. So our conspiracy this week is something that I've heard a lot. I literally worked at a Christian summer camp with a camp director who 100% believed what I'm about to say without a shadow of a doubt, which is Santa really Satan? I mean, you've got... When I was a young, innocent teenager and didn't know any better, I dismissed her whole premise because her whole argument was, you just move one letter. All you have to do is just move one letter.
Oh, man.
Yeah? Yeah, but...
We're seconds from collapse.
Okay. Now, let's get into it, right? So Santa, the jolly man of the season, is actually a force of evil inside of this world, and... There's several backing arguments to this one. First, Santa Claus uses selective treatment to punish poor kids because rich kids get disproportionately more, making them envy the wants of the more, making them treat other humans less like humans because they want more, right? Number two, he upholds the grounds of capitalism, which is an inherently a false and dictatorial system. And third, he exhibits a fundamental moral corruptness, which means that he should be a judge of no one. So let's start off on the first principle, which is that Santa and Saint Nicholas are not the same person. Okay? Now, we hear him referred to as jolly old Saint Nick, but Saint Nicholas actually lived in modern-day Turkey.
Yes.
Not anywhere near the North Pole, right? This is something that came along afterwards. And St. Nicholas was known for giving great gifts to poor kids. Kids who could not afford things, he would sneak into their house and he would give them gifts because they couldn't afford it.
He also gave change to young women so they wouldn't become hookers, so I wouldn't necessarily...
He was the patron saint of prostitutes. Look it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm finding out things today, right? Now, Santa, in comparison, gives disproportionately more Santa gives more disproportionate... He gives more to rich kids.
Yeah.
He gives substantially more to rich kids than to poor kids. Number two, when Saint Nick died... He died.
His bones are
enshrined.
I was going to say, we're talking about the gentleman in Turkey, not the big
Santa
man in a red suit.
Yes.
No.
Saint Nicholas is dead.
Can't do that to me.
If you guys want to, you can watch the puppet history on this one, which is fantastic. And it features a great story about how he also resurrected two kids who were apparently killed by a butcher and then hid inside of a pickle barrel.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that story.
What has Santa done? Nothing but continue to prop up the moral corruptness of the system of capitalism for his own fame and increasing the hold of evil corporations who definitely sold their souls to who? To him. Satan.
But, that old song, you know... If you sit on my lap today,
stop,
it's so pure.
Okay. Number two. Here's my second argument against... Here's my second argument against Santa Claus. He employs minority workers, right?
Oh my God.
He employs minority workers who... Keep this in mind. He keeps them in a geologically isolated area where they cannot go and find other work. And he employs them inside of a work that can only be done by them, therefore keeping them in a monopoly. It is just the same evil practices as the mining companies operating company stores that they pay their workers in credits for.
But... You know, he employs, you know, elves for their nimble hands. I mean, Disney can't even hire dwarves to play dwarves in the new Snow White.
Oh,
so
man.
at least he's sticking to his guns. At least he's not getting humans to play elves.
Yes, definitely super happy about the oncoming North Pole triangle shirtwaist fire.
Now, I just want to state this. Everybody's trying to shake up steam for their monopoly hold on the PC gaming market. Let's talk about the real monopoly, which is held by this man up inside of the North Pole who is employing poor, underprivileged, underprivileged mythical creatures for his own division of labor.
But he is educating the crap out of them. You see how complex the new PS5s and Xbox systems are? And they're making that stuff?
Yeah, and what's he paying them? I want to see the receipts. What is Santa paying
education,
those elves?
Education.
Yeah, say that to all the unpaid interns across America. Say, that's fair and proper.
Do you think Santa's paying import tariffs?
I don't know.
I don't think he's paying taxes.
I don't think he's paying Bo Diddley. That's what I think.
I think he does the chimney drop so he can avoid having to come through.
Where is he getting the gold for all the circuit boards?
That's another excellent question. Where is he resourcing all of this from? And finally,
is Santa a grave robber? Is he taking all the gold teeth?
That's Why is that be. The first spot that you went to?
No one's using it? I don't know.
You didn't want to say, maybe he's got a gold mine up in the North Pole that he forces the...
No, it's the teeth, man. It's definitely okay.
Well, I mean, he started with the pyramids and the big tombs there.
Yeah.
Since he's taken all that, he's moved on to people's teeth.
Haven't you heard the conspiracy theory? Those are full of rice. They're food storage.
Oh, the...
I had a middle school teacher try to convince me of this. Middle school history teacher that the pyramids were just food storage. They weren't graves. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll bleep that.
And my last piece of evidence here is that Santa Claus exhibits all seven of the seven deadly sins.
Oh,
first,
hit him.
Lust. This one is twofold. Santa causes a materialistic lust for items that children want to have but can't have, right? He causes a materialistic lust. Also, secondarily, there are far too many songs about Santa and certain moms for me to believe that relationship is strictly platonic. Number two, greed. Santa inspires what should be a simple small holiday to appreciate the savior of the world being born into a money-making opportunity for companies that already have too much money. In this season, where everyone is trying to make as much money as possible, they become completely soulless husks of humanity as they try to squeeze every dollar that they can to make kids' dreams happy. Disgusting!
Awful.
Man, wanting kids to be happy, the worst.
Yes, no, but they use that simple one of making kids to be happy to squeeze dollars out of poor families. Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's an awful time. Why is it that we have a designated charity for just getting kids gifts? Think about that. We could be putting... People are outspending money that they don't have trying to get their kids gifts when they could be getting their kids foods or other important resources. Third,
bread for tots just doesn't really like, it doesn't roll off the tongue nearly as well.
Third, envy.
Well, yeah, they envy the rich kids. That one's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, that was actually literally the whole thing here. But the problem is that he inspires the proletariat to continue on with their ongoing quest to become mindless husks for the bourgeoisie. Inside of the system, he upholds the basic grounds of capitalism to enforce a whole group of people into being useless, while at the same time, he enforces the proletariat to continue their hard, ongoing struggle inside of the soulless jobs that they work for materialistic goods that they don't need.
What's the bourgeoisie?
And the proletariat.
According
to Karl Marx's theory of communism, you have two classes. The proletariats, who go out and they do all the manual work, and the bourgeoisie, who profits. So the bourgeoisie is the upper crust who does not actually work. They just receive from the hard work, sweat, and blood from the underwhelming masses who swarm underneath them to uphold them on their ghastly thrones.
Gotcha.
Fourth, gluttony.
Cookies, need we say more?
The creature we call Santa Claus is the classical definition of gluttony. Eating without restraint and need, he eats millions of milk and cookies in a night as some sort of sick payment for gifts. Not to mention, his holiday causes a glut of overindulgence overindulgences with real people. Think about this.
Doesn't Thanksgiving and Halloween do that as well?
Shush. Think about it. We're going to have holiday seasons, holiday parties where people are going to eat themselves to their full. And people are starving to death, starving to death across the world elsewhere. Think about just the amount of gluttony that this season inspires.
We should be baby birding the world.
What are we on? One, two,
five.
Four. Five. What? Oh. Oh, no.
Oh?
I might be missing it.
Pride?
Anyway, sloth.
Sloth.
He inspires sloth. Now, you might be saying, Josh, how does he inspire sloth? Doesn't he motivate kids to be good? Doesn't he motivate kids to aspire to work towards a goal of being a good kid and not receiving coal for Christmas? Well, here is my story. Mm-hmm. What does Santa Claus actually judge kids off of? Who does he give actual better gifts to?
Rich people.
The rich, right? He inspires the proletariats to have the idea of swimming towards the unachievable reaches of becoming a bourgeoisie, inspiring a whole culture that is envious of sloth, envious of not working, envious of not producing anything valuable for the world.
Also, like, as a kid that grew up in admittedly reformed Santa household, just saying. Just putting that out there. What was the thing that you did as a kid? You bided your time and you waited for Christmas instead of going and getting a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds pretty freaking lazy to me.
Come on, Timmy, you're 10 years old. Go work in the mines.
So instead of finding
Pennsylvania
use,
coal.
Instead of finding use, instead of finding aspiration in being a proletariat, which actually inspires better value to this world than the bourgeoisie, they make the proletariats aspire to become the bourgeoisie. We uphold them on sort of some sort of sick throne.
Thank
where
you,
we
Bezos.
Do not go ahead and question why they're there.
All hail Mark Zuckerberg.
My final point is this. Pride, perhaps in the most potent and sickest way, he exhibits this particular trait. On a holiday that was meant to be the day that we celebrate the Savior of the world coming into this earth to go ahead and save us from our sins, what has he done? He has made it about himself. He has turned this holiday, which was supposed to be our reflection on the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and being born into absolute poverty, he has instead made poverty to be the undesirable position as we aspire to gain more and more materialistic wealth. Does not Jesus himself say that we cannot serve two masters? Does not Jesus say that the rich will enter it through the gates of heaven, through the like a camel through the eye of a needle? And yet here we are, standing here on this point, worshiping a fat man every once a year as he goes ahead and does this not yet exhibit the very basic traits of Satan himself.
Santa is not fat. Coke made Santa fat. That's just a marketing ploy.
Why do you know that? What?
Yeah, no. Oddly enough, Santa was actually skinny until I think it was like the 60s. And then like the whole like big Santa came along with the Coke ads and stuff.
Well, huh. Now there's the real conspiracy theory. Big Santa.
Because like if you look at early, like really early versions of like The Night Before Christmas, he's drawn as like a slender, like not like thin, but like, you know, a normally proportioned man. And yeah, no. Coke was like, make him fat and jolly. Sell that Coke.
Okay, stop right. Straw-manning my argument, okay? Stop focusing on one easy-to-discredit point to ignore the whole overwhelming evidence that he has acted just as Satan himself acted, supposedly, according to some dubious scripture theology, where he demanded that he be worshipped as much as God himself, and therefore he turned the attention of humans away from God and onto their own materialistic desires so that they could instead worship him. I rest my case.
Ooh, hold on there now, bud. That was six. Wrath.
Oh, that one's easy. He gives people coal. If you don't choose to follow his example, he lashes out unjustly and gives you, you know, a reminder of where you come from.
Coal can heat your home.
Also, shall
good
I
for poor people.
Shall I state, do I need to remind people that in early postcards of Santa, who is riding with him in his sleigh with him from place to place, it is none other than the Krampus.
Yeah.
Him and Krampus work together. They are an ongoing team. He works with the good kids and Krampus punishes the bad kids. No, it's only been
he doesn't punish them. He eats them.
Or he drags them to hell inside of his sack.
Yeah.
Or sometimes he just beats them with switches. Okay?
Yeah, it just depends on the severity. Yeah. The less severe, the more you get punished.
So, inside of every regard, Santa is also a part of the exhibition of wrath, where he goes ahead and he judges kids. Now, let's also go ahead and keep on the mind here that, again, his only criteria for judging kids, you don't see Krampus dragging off rich kids inside of a sack to go be eaten inside of the depths of hell. Who do you see? Who is it? It's the poor, underprivileged kids.
Well, yeah, because they talk back to the upper echelon. You're not allowed to do that.
So inside of this regards,
the power system.
So inside of this regards, he inspires wrath both inside of the proletariats, inside of the bourgeoisie, as they both aspire to not like one another inside of an ongoing class war that only one class is aware of, the bourgeoisie.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
We gotta chill. This is too convincing. I'm uncomfortable. Yeah. Oh, man.
Mm. Well,
I wasn't kidding when I said that this was my most unstable conspiracy theory yet.
I'm gonna give that a four out of five for like believability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll kick it with four. As a side note. And we can cut this if you feel that it's necessary. Do you know that some early cultures it was not a Krampus or actually no it wasn't Krampus that traveled with Santa. It was actually technically it was the saint and 6 to 8 black men.
Yeah.
With clubs apparently. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Was the mythos.
Yep. Yeah. The mythos was that he had black thugs that would.
They would put the presents into kids' shoes. I don't remember what nationality this. There's a great comedic short story by David Sedaris that's just like makes a mockery of all of this. But yeah, the story is that they would either put gifts into their shoes or they would 6 to 8 black men would break into your home and
club beat you
with clubs and then kidnap you and take you away.
Wow,
which is nuts.
Boy, that sounds like an early South story.
Like, next level crazy.
Oh, man.
Anyway, yeah, so we've come a long way. Wow.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
What's funny is, Krampus kind of falls in, in that cryptid land now. Technically, he's...
Ooh, cryptid land.
Yeah, Krampus is a cryptid. And the reason that I bring this up is because the next story that I pulled was Rise of the Cryptid Hunters. So, cryptid hunting, which is something that I don't think I'd ever actually want to do. I can talk a big game, but I'm pretty sure...
That's a bummer, because with the viewer goals, we're going to do that before long.
I'm all for, going through the woods looking for evidence. I'm not for grabbing sharp pointy sticks and trying to kill the thing. As soon as the thing is spotted, I'm out. That is where it ends being fun.
Call me Ishmael.
I mean, obviously, if I had a big long stick with a heavy blunt object on one end and a sharpened blade on the front and a big insect, that would be my first choice. But I also feel like I could go dual blades on that bad boy. Perhaps just inside of the long run, I could go switchblade, but...
Why do you want a big insect?
Monster Hunter.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- Viewers are not allowed to judge me because I main Insect Clave. I'm just trying to figure out what Johnny's about these days.
So this got pulled into the blog. It kind of seems like this one was written more like an actual story, like not like pulled from a blog post anywhere. So, well, we'll see. I'll be quite interested to see what you guys feel about this writing or this, yeah, this start of a story anyways.
Also, sorry, folks, if it sounds like we're kind of like confused about it, it's because the blog itself is poorly
put together.
Yeah. It's ill-organized, you could say. So it's not collection. Like there's like a section of, oh yeah, this is like true stuff, or oh yeah, this was pulled from social media or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's just kind of like a big festering pit of weird.
Yeah, yeah, which is what this whole podcast is about.
Don't get me wrong. We're all about it. It's just like sometimes you stick your hand in and you pull out like, oh, this is a classical narrative.
Yeah.
And sometimes you pull it out and it's like, oh, this is a blog form written from a man who saw his friends go insane. Yeah.
Donuts.
Go nuts for donuts.
Yay.
Anyways. There were always ruffians, teenagers who didn't want to play by the rules. Some folks would call them daring, while others would call them crazy. My parents used to tell me about gangs of kids running about pulling simple pranks, if only. Nowadays, it seems that most troublesome teens were recruited into hunting factions. It was nothing serious, or so the recruiters would say, just a way for us to fight back against the others. Of course, by the others, they meant the things that went bump in the night. Creepypastas, cryptids, you name it, it was ranked and hunted. Was this legal? No. But was it overlooked because it helps keep people safe? Sometimes. Recently, more and more students have been going missing, succumbing to the temptations of a well-paying gig, than succumbing to whatever or whoever they were sent after. Wasn't fair. They knew that we lived in a poorer area, one more affected by the incidents. What teenager wouldn't want to avenge their family, or better still, provide for those that remained? Hunters were painted as problem kids, but they really weren't. I didn't want that for me, though. I'd been holding out, ignoring the money offered to join the hunters. Both my friend Sylph and I had made a pact long ago that neither one of us would do something as stupid as join the hunters. We had lost many classmates and neighbors, and we didn't want to lose each other. But like all promises made, it would be broken. Broken on that fateful day. I remember that morning clear as day. It was cold. But then again, when you can't pay for heat, when isn't it cold? The morning air was silent. I had woken early and sat outside the shack I called home, sipping on instant coffee, waiting for something, anything to happen. There was a scream that pierced the morning air. It came from Sylph's shack.
All right, I'm sorry. Let me try that one again. Was that better?
That's better. Watch.
It came from Sylph Shack. I moved quickly, dropping my coffee, and I broke into a full sprint. When I arrived, I saw only the back of some figures running down the road, a small sack in one of their hands. I quickly ran through the door that had been ripped off its hinges. Blood was splattered all over the house. It looked as if the place had been ransacked, furniture broken, bodies mangled. Nothing seemed to be whole. The sound of static coming from a busted radio was the only sound in the house.
Sylph, where are you?
Silence.
Sylph!
We are in here.
I ran around to one of the cupboards that had a table thrown in front of it. Reefing on the table, I soon freed Sylph. She looked at me, pain and terror written on their face.
They came. I thought the nest was gone, but they came. Why here? Why us? Why now? What am I going to do?
I grabbed her by the hand and we walked to my home. After a quick breakfast, I got to work cleaning up while she sat.
Do you want my family got murdered special? Eggs and bacon.
Oh, okay. I grabbed her by the hand and we walked home. After a quick breakfast, I got to work, cleaning up while she sat staring into the void. In Sylph's eyes, I could see a person on edge. Staring into the void. The day progressed and not one of us said much. We just kind of sat there in silence. And then a knock rang out. The sound brought us back to our bleak present, and I quickly went to open the door. I was greeted with the crooked smile of a hunter recruiter. His eyes darted around the room, and he pushed past me.
I'm sorry for your loss, folks, but let me just say that this is the perfect time for you to sign.
I started to ask the gentleman to leave, but then Sylph cut me off.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah. They will pay. Those monsters will pay. Where do I sign?
Just come with me and I'll take you to RHQ.
With a deceptive grin, he shuffled Sylph out the door and down the road. I was just stuck, standing there. My feet started to move before my brain did. Next thing I knew, I was following after them like a lost pup. The recruiter grunted as I fell in line, and we continued on our way.
It did that just to be discreet, but it was so much more distracting. He did that so he was out of shot and everything. And then he just... I just watched him army crawl across the room. Let it never be said that we don't care about this podcast. We got mad devotion.
Put it at work.
To say that where we arrived was HQ was generous. There were people huddled together in what used to be an old Family Dollar before it closed down. We walked into a room filled with other recruiters being followed by other teens. We were each handed a bandana to signify our rank and sent to the main quarters with everyone else.
Did it have a big MR1 on it? Where they sent on a quest to go hunt some small jaggy?
After a couple of days, we had fallen into the routine of training, skipping school and causing other mayhem while we learned to track down those that would do us harm. One evening, we were addressed by the headhunter. Now, I am still unsure if that was because he was the boss or because he kept the heads... Sorry. So we are addressed by the headhunter. Why was he the headhunter? Still unsure. I'm still unsure if it was because he was a boss or because he kept the heads of his kills. Either way, he was a tough dude. He yelled out to us that there had been reports of alien big cats, and that one in particular had been causing issues in the nearby area. Fiskerton Phantom. This creature was said to be strong enough to cause serious harm, and even though he was just being a creep, he would need to be eliminated. He was ranked at 97, so he shouldn't cause the organization much issue. As such, they sent out the new hunters to take care of the cat. Sylph and I were chosen, and we went out with our squad, a group totaling 4 members: Sylph, Frank, Sully, and I. The tracks of this bipedal cat were easy enough to find and follow. The group continued to track well into the night. Eventually, we caught up to Fiskerton, standing in a clearing, staring in our direction. His eyes glowed yellow, and his black fur stood in contrast to the full moon that shone around us. His arms were long, and he had human hands. This creature was more ape than cat. Sully shouted and charged the beast, his brother Frank shortly behind him. I grunted in anger as Sylph and I followed suit. Fiskerton sat there, unbothered, as we charged him. He didn't move until Sully was within an inch of him. He quickly smashed Sully's head between his hands in one swift clapping motion. Without pause, the cryptid then removed the spine of this boy like a sword from a sheath and used it to sweep the remaining three of us off our feet.
Oh my gosh! That's so metal! What the frick kind of Mortal Kombat stuff is this?
Sweep the legs! Da-da-da-da-da.
You have a problem with that, Mr. Lawrence.
I hit my head and blacked out. I came to hearing Sylph scream as the cat just sat hunched over staring at her. How was this thing ranked 97? He was brutal! I looked over to the other side of me to see Frank standing, eyeing the beast with anger. He charged again, this time being punched in the sternum by the cryptid. The sound was like nothing I'd ever heard. His sternum shattered and his lungs imploded upon impact. Frank was dead before he hit the ground. This caused Sylph to scream more.
Now, I'm imagining it's got more anger to it, so it's more like...
The cryptid seemed startled and went to swing at her. Again, my feet moved before my brain as I took the full force of his fist right into my lower back.
I am so sorry.
I'll be fine. I lied as the loss of feeling in my legs was becoming more and more evident. You need to run.
No, I won't. Besides, it's just staring at us now.
There's a sound we heard from the woods. And then there was a sound. We heard it from the woods. It was a baying sound that split the night. Whatever it was, you could tell it was closing in. I felt the footsteps of the cryptid get farther away.
Now I need you to run.
No, I won't.
Argued Sylph.
Look, I can't move. Something else is coming. Get out of here.
I don't want to leave you, Jake. I can't.
No sooner had those words left her lips, I blacked out. I don't know what happened next, nor do I know what happened to me. All I can remember from that point on is a smell of fear around me.
Dun, dun, dun!
All right.
Do you not copy and paste the whole story or something?
No, that's it. What? I'm assuming there's a part two somewhere. I've been trying to dig and find it so that hopefully we can, you know, get more detail about how he's, you know, able to write this story. Mm-hmm. So he apparently survived. I don't know in what form he survived. But.
Yeah, because the other one just instant KO. Yeah, this is what happens when you don't go out and you appropriately rank up wearing the bits of the other monsters that you had killed as armor. Had they gone out and they had a... But dang, one hit KOs every time.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. Two of the three. Because technically, like, he wasn't, like, sure, he blacked out, but I mean, he wasn't dead. Yeah. Like, I mean, sure.
He did get carted. He got carted and got picked up by cats. That much is true.
Yeah, no, I think this definitely makes your fear of apes very valid.
I've never,
I was never
just going spine.
Which, like,
why, when you said it like that, did I picture Abraham Lincoln dressed as a Bigfoot doing that? That's my real question. Spine, yeet. And I was in my head, imagine him going 47 years ago, our forefathers killed your forefathers in an unending conflict.
And see, like, this terrifies me because, like, you know, ranked 97, like, this is a pretty, like I'm assuming I would assume Bigfoot would be higher, and, like, you know, what could he do?
Or is it just kind of based off of fame?
Maybe that too.
It's like how in My Hero Academia you've got, like, you've got like Class A and Class B, and Class B is just as competent as Class A, but everybody knows Class A better because Class A had to get inside of the fights.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think Class A is just whether or not you're allowed to pull a trailer behind you. that's some trucking humor. For yeah, you know, I'm here as a stand-in for the common man. Yeah, definitely me. Definitely.
So yeah, I'd definitely rate this. Like, you know, thinking as like a high school student, like getting pulled into this world, like this would definitely be like a 4. If I, you know, yeah, no good. Very scary. Very not fun.
It's very reminiscent of just joining a gang.
Well, yeah, because like, and you know, when he was talking in the beginning, like I was thinking like, you know, the greasers, like, or if you read stuff like, the book that, you know, the Stay Golden Pony Boy.
The Outsiders.
Like it was reminiscent of that. But yeah, because of the times that they're apparently in where these cryptids and creepypastas are just running rampant, instead of, you know, fighting the upper class, they're all just killing monsters.
Which is just pretty wicked, actually. Also the bandanas.
Now, I want to know who's funding these groups inside of this world. Like, who's going out there and who's paying the money? Is it, again, the bourgeoisie oppressing the proletariats as they go out and try to keep the world safe for the rich people?
Yeah, and, like, who's coming up with the ranks of these monsters? Like, I mean, there's got to be something else going on.
Also, the nest.
Yeah.
The nest is interesting terminology there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a hive somewhere or multiple. Yeah.
Oh, man, oh, dang it. We've got more creepypastas in the wall again.
Not a game.
There's hillies in the walls.
So, yeah, I'm going to try to do some digging, see if I can find a continuation of the story and see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, the blog is cool, but it's also just kind of like a cesspool, so.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, we shall see.
Oh, man.
She's a youth.
Well, do you guys want to read a AI-generated horror story? From the prompt, write me a horror story about evil donuts killing old men, alien big cats, and a demonic Satan. We've get this story. Once upon a time, in a small town, there lived an old man named George. He was a retired baker who had spent his entire life baking the most delicious donuts in town. He was known for his signature recipe, which he had perfected over the years. One day, George decided to bake a batch of donuts for his friends at the local senior center. Little did he know that the donuts that he had baked turned out to be evil. As soon as the old men at the senior center took a bite from the donuts, they started to feel strange. Suddenly, their eyes turned red and they started to behave erratically. The donuts had turned them into zombies, and they were now under the control of the evil donuts. Meanwhile, in a nearby forest, a group of alien big cats had landed on Earth. They were on a mission to conquer the planet and enslave all humans. The alien big cats were intelligent, and they had the ability to communicate with each other telepathically. They had been observing the humans for a while and learned about their weaknesses. The alien big cats knew that humans love Santa Claus, and they decided to use this to their advantage. They created a demonic Santa Claus, unnecessary, who would lure out the humans into a trap. The demonic Satan, a Freudian slip there. The demonic Santa Claus was terrifying with long horns and sharp claws. He was the perfect bait because everybody would see that and go, yes,
Krampus.
Take me, Father Papa.
Santa.
Papa Noel.
Papa Noel. No, claw hurt. sorry, folks.
The next sentence.
The evil donuts and the demonic Santa Claus joined forces, and together they started to hunt down the old men. The old men were defenseless against the evil donuts and demonic Santa Claus. They tried to run, but the donuts were too fast, and the demonic Santa Claus was too powerful. In the end, the evil donuts and the demonic Santa Claus succeeded in their mission. They had killed all the old men. and the alien big cats had enslaved the rest of the world. The town was now under the control of the evil donuts and the demonic Santa Claus and the alien big cats. The end.